This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome to Stop the Presses here on the 1st of March. Yes, it is the 1st of March, 2019. I'm your almost fully recovered host, Mark Anderson. I had to miss Wednesday due to a cold and a little affliction known affectionately and humorously as laryngitis or laryngitis. And Monday I was on the road getting here to Pennsylvania where I'm at now, hoping I can get down to Capitol Hill and see if the Congress critters are still in session. A couple of brief announcements. The year 2019, of course, is the 90th year since the Great Depression in America. I'll be running some analytical shows from time to time to analyze the root causes of the Great Depression, the central role of the money changers, the debt merchants, the central bankers, and their commercial banking confreres. And I'll be looking at the speeches of Father Charles Coughlin, some of which I've played already, the great radio priest that tried to drive the money changers out of the temple in his day, and the Louisiana kingfish, Huey P. Long, the great Louisiana senator. He, too, has some great speeches in the archive about the causes and results of the Great Depression. So a very timely thing I'll be covering from time to time as 2019 goes by. Now, today's guest is a longtime journalistic colleague and friend of mine, Mike Robinson of UK Column News. That's ukcolumn.org. I'm periodically a guest on that show, as are many other fine journalists, Patrick Henningsen, David Scott, David Ellis, and others. And that show, just like this show, in fact, goes Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, and we'll talk more about that. But I first had Mike on this show, some 9-10 years ago, and things just kind of went from there. How you doing, Mike? You out there?
Mark, yes, doing very well, thank you.
Yeah, great to talk to you. I had a great time there this past spring and early summer, of course, covering the Media on Trial conference, and I can explain later on how people can get articles and coverage on Media on Trial, where many exposés were done on the media's complicity in totally misrepresenting what's been going on in Syria, and the nefarious role of the White Helmets and many other things were covered there. But Mike, I mainly wanted to have you on the show today to retrace our steps a little bit about Bilderberg and some odds and ends, but mostly about Brexit. American audiences don't get a lot of sound, dependable Brexit news, and that's one of you guys' fortes among many. Let's start with that. Just what are we looking at here? Of course, the vote was in June of 2016. Brexit, of course, is shorthand for British exit. You're supposed to be getting out of the European Union, so you're told. There's a lot of ties and a lot of entanglements, the European army being a big one. Just kind of walk us through the Best of Both Worlds document by David Cameron. Kind of start there. Just what is this Brexit thing anyway?
Yes, briefly, Brexit, of course, is the decision by the UK allegedly to leave the European Union. This process really began, I suppose, in 2015 or so, with David Cameron saying that he had just won a general election, and he had promised in the manifesto for that election that he would give the public the opportunity to vote in a referendum on whether they wanted to be members of the European Union or not. to continue to be members of the European Union or not. There are many reasons possibly why he decided that he would do this, but this he had made this promise. Certainly part of the reason was that he was under increasing pressure from a faction within his own Conservative Party to do that. So anyway, he made that agreement, and he was sort of forced to follow through with it. But he decided that the best approach would be to attempt to placate the sort of Eurosceptic part of his own party, and also the Eurosceptic section of society as a whole within the UK, by touring all the European countries and all the European leaders. He went to meet all the European leaders, and he said, look, Britain wants to have a slightly different arrangement, a slightly different relationship with the European Union, and we feel that much of the problem that British people have with the European Union is could be solved if the European Union was to reform in certain ways. And so he went scuttling around Europe and spoke to all the European leaders, and eventually in February of 2016 he came back with a deal which would see Britain's relationship change with the European Union, but we would stay in the European Union. And so this deal became the basis of his campaigning for the subsequent referendum, which took place about 6 months later. Now, the deal was published as a document called The Best of Both Worlds, and basically the upshot of that document was that Britain would stay inside a reformed European Union, but would be allowed to opt out of certain European institutions that it didn't like, for example, the Common Agricultural Policy, the Common Fisheries Policy, and so on. And these are sort of policies that are putting controls on farming and on fishing, for example, which are deeply unpopular within Britain. And the other issue that has been deeply unpopular within Britain over the last decade or so has been the unlimited immigration into the country, not only from the European Union, but also from outside of the European Union. But anyway, he presented that policy to the public. We went through 6 months of argument about whether we should be in or out, and eventually the referendum took place in 2016, in the middle of the year. And as you know, Mark, Britain's voters decided that we would be better off out. That put David Cameron in a very difficult position, because he is and has always been a Europhile, and he's very keen on Europe, and he didn't really want to leave. So he resigned at that point. Theresa May took over, and Theresa May had all through this entire process up to this point stayed very, very quiet publicly about what her position was on Europe, but basically, Theresa May is also a Europhile. She also does not want to leave the European Union. So she then immediately, having taken over from David Cameron as Prime Minister, said, don't worry, you can trust me, I will deliver on Brexit, even though she has always been and in fact voted for staying in. So it wasn't very clear how she was possibly going to get Britain out of the EU when she wants to stay in. And in fact, if you look at the British Parliament as a whole, there are 650 MPs in the House of Commons, and there are probably about 100 of them that actually want to leave, and the rest don't really want to leave. And if you look at Theresa May's cabinet, it's maybe 50-50 split. But the civil servants, the officials that she has around her, they all want to stay in as well. So from the beginning, Mark, it was pretty clear to us that it was extremely unlikely that whatever happened at the end, we would actually leave. And so here we are 2.5 years later, and basically the situation is that the deal that Theresa May has put on the table Whereas if you look back at what David Cameron presented in the first place, he was presenting the notion that we would stay in, but Britain would opt out of certain European institutions. Theresa May's deal is based on the idea that we come out, but we then opt back into certain institutions. So, you know, on a practical level and real world level, we're not coming out under those circumstances because we will still be part of some pretty significant European institutions. So that's where we are at the moment. The arguments that are going on that are never-ending, apparently, are based around the problems involving the border between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland. And, you know, these problems have been understood from the day of the referendum. So really for us to get 2.5 years down the road, right up against the deadline of the date that we're supposed to be leaving, and still be facing the same arguments, is either grossly incompetent or is by design. And my personal opinion is by design.
What is the deadline, for the record?
Well, supposedly it's the 29th of March, they are already now talking about delaying that by 2 months.
Oh boy!
And the European Union has made it clear that they would be happy for it to be delayed significantly longer than that. So you know, from a purely practical standpoint, if we take the fact that there's a huge tranche of legislation which has to be passed in order to prepare for us leaving, and that has to be supposedly complete by the 29th of March. It's simply not, even if the House of Commons was working properly and they weren't arguing amongst themselves, there literally is not enough time to process all that legislation. So, you know, for quite some time now, it's been clear that the 29th of March was not a date that could be met.
Is it accurate to say that the British people that voted for this to get out of the European Union expected something much more clean and straightforward, and they didn't anticipate all this red tape?
I think they certainly anticipated the red tape because the European Union has a reputation for it.
But
the expectation was that we would leave, and part of the problem here is that there was never any agreement about what that meant. So in many people's minds, yes, a clean break is naturally what you would imagine when you're talking about leaving an institution like the European Union. But the way that the narrative has been controlled over the last 2 or 3 years, in many people's minds, what leaving has meant has not been clear. So, for example, you know, the issue here is that the European Union itself is such a vast organization with a huge number of, you know, it covers every possible policy area. And,
right.
You know, and trade is obviously a key policy area. And, you know, originally the European Union began as a trading bloc with a bunch of sovereign countries deciding to set up an easy way to trade amongst each other, which eventually became what's known as the single market, where they effectively consolidated all the rules about between themselves so that you know, there was no customs blocks between countries and there were no tariffs and you know, basically selling something in France was a French person selling something in France was just as easy as a French person selling something to the Netherlands or to Germany. They didn't have to complete any additional paperwork to transfer goods across borders. And in fact, you know, for as long as I can remember, to drive from from Paris to Berlin or from Berlin to Amsterdam, there are no borders because it's a completely open internally. There basically are no borders. So anyway, the single market, but with the single market came certain rules. So it just wasn't about the free movement of goods from one place to another. It was also the free movement of people from one place to another. And the problem that Britain has faced is because of the type of social security system that we have in Britain. It's quite an attractive place for people to come to, and certainly the sort of foreign policy that Britain has run in the last couple of decades has encouraged people to come to end up in Britain, because they've been told that they can access certain benefits and certain social security, and of course the way that they're doing that is that they're coming into Italy or to Spain, and then once they're in the EU, then they've got no restrictions on them coming into any other country. Now, the way that the immigration system in the EU is supposed to work is that, for example, an asylum seeker would be required to be looked after and housed and so on in the country in which they enter the European Union. So if they're coming into the Czech Republic or Italy or Spain, that's where they're supposed to stay. They're supposed to come into and stay in the country that they first come into. But of course, that's not happening, and they've been coming to the UK, and this has really been one of the major problems.
There's a lot to take in here. Now the situation is such, though, where people really don't know what to expect even now, right? The press has really been casting a lot of dust in the air. Hasn't the press contributed to a sort of intellectual chaos, kind of reporting as if all of this is just infighting and partisan politics, obscuring the idea that there could be a more deep-seated agenda here? I mean, that's much of the press that I've seen is it just portrays everything as confusion and bickering and infighting. Not that this could have been a fix from the very beginning, the Brexit. Would that be generally true about the mainstream press there?
Well, look, the mainstream press here is just as bad as the mainstream press in the United States. And the mainstream press here also doesn't want Britain to leave the European Union. They are also generally Europhiles. A large amount of the sort of editorial steer comes from the BBC, and the BBC is utterly pro-Europe, and the BBC has received quite a bit of money from the European Union over the years. I think that the press... It would be perfectly justifiable to suggest that the press in the UK has done everything they can to confuse and obfuscate and generate more chaos through misreporting or promotion of scare stories about Brexit. I mean, the level of fear mongering that we have in the country at the moment in the press, with respect to the potential that we might end up leaving the European Union with no deal, everything is going to happen to us. The world is going to collapse. The sky is going to fall. We are going to all die because we can't get medication into the country. It's staggering just how determined that the press is to push every scare story that they can possibly imagine, and all of it's pretty much fake news, Mark.
Yeah, we got about 1 minute before the first commercial break, Mike. We'll carry over with some more questions here with Mike Robertson, the UK Column News here on Stop the Presses. We'll be right back.
Talk the single smile, such the talk. gonna go? How they drown in incomplete capacity? Strangers thought them all when the fear it calls. How we drown in stylistic audacity? Charge the common ground.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 today.
February is Heart Month. Every year for the month of February, to show our appreciation to Extendivite's faithful customers, we have a sale. If you would like to try Extendivite, now is the time to get a few months ahead and really give Extendivite the time to show you how it works. Most of Extendivite's long-term customers wait for this sale to stock up. People and doctors tell us about the unbelievable improvements that they have experienced in their overall health, not just the heart. Extendivite wants you to experience the power of these herbs. Get a four-month supply for only $115 for either the capsules or tincture. Please take advantage of this once-per-year sale and get healthy for life. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or find us on Amazon.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Did you know that neither the American Medical Association nor the American Bar Association were established to benefit the American people? Have you recognized that in our country, health care has little to do with health, and that our court system has nothing to do with justice? The priests of both medicine and law have been incentivized to implement a dark agenda on behalf of the Bilderbergers and their ilk. To protect ourselves and our progeny, we need to take a much closer look at how these two giant industries really work. Join me, Al Whitney, on In Defense of Humanity, Saturdays at 7 p.m. Central, as we expose the matrix and learn how not to consent to our own destruction.
Here on March 1st, 2019, and we're getting into a short segment now, and then at the bottom of the hour, there's some more ads. Then we get into one more long segment, one more set of ads about 10 minutes before the top of the hour, and then the show ends. That's a reminder to listeners and to my guest, Mike Robinson of UK Column News. Mike, in this short segment, and we'll probably take calls for those so inclined in the second half, that's 800-313-9443. Again, 800-313-9443 in the second half of the show. Please keep calls focused on Brexit and related EU matters and UK matters. Mike, I was writing down some notes during the break. Another thing for the record, because again, American audiences don't get a lot of dependable Brexit news, and sometimes they don't get any that you can depend on. What was the vote total in rough percentages back in June of 2016? How strong was the Brexit vote?
If you can believe the result, it was 52-48. So I mean, it was a close vote in a sense, but this of course has been taken full advantage of by those who would prefer that they take the opportunity to take advantage of a narrative that the country is split. Now, as time has gone on and people are getting more and more impatient with how things are playing out, they're now at the point of talking about perhaps needing to hold a second referendum, because this is the traditional way that Europe does things. If they get the wrong answer the first time, they keep holding referenda until they get the right answer.
I would make a quick footnote that a lot of countries were tricked into the EU in the first place that way. Oh, you said no. Well, we didn't quite hear you. What was that? And that included a few countries joining the EU. So yeah, that's a very.
Well, I mean, the most famous example of this, Mark, is when the Lisbon Treaty was being ratified. Ireland held a referendum over that, and the referendum was lost by the European Union side. And so they waited a year and they held another referendum, and this time they won the vote. Now, there were allegations of voter fraud and so on over that. I don't know if that was ever proven definitively, but, you know, nonetheless, there seemed to be some evidence of open boxes and so on, which raises questions. So, you know, again, we're talking about there's now talk about having a second referendum in the UK. And you know, the biggest question in people's minds is what the question would actually be in the referendum, because if it's Theresa May's deal which is being voted on, well, in fact, you know, if there's one thing that those who wish to remain in the EU and those who wish to leave the EU agree on, it is that Theresa May's deal is a bad deal. So you know, that's not really a practical question to ask. So if they ask once again the same question, do you want to be in or do you want to be out, it's many people believe now at this point that in fact the vote would be bigger for leaving, because while people are increasingly impatient with the process and with the rhetoric in the press and with the rhetoric from members of parliament, I think that this process has in many cases made people more determined to get out, because they're sick of the red tape and the nonsense that goes with EU membership.
Are there any legal problems with just saying, well, we had one referendum, we the establishment don't really like the result, and so let's have a second referendum? Is that legal to just sort of downplay or disregard the first referendum from June of 2016 and say, hey, let's just have a second one? Is there any kind of legal issue there in terms of elections?
No, there isn't, because referendums are not constitutionally are not really part of our political process, so they're not legally binding.
Okay.
So although the referendum was a popular vote and the vote went a particular way, you know, the British government was not under any legal, there was no legal requirement for them to follow that. It would have been political suicide for them not to follow it. And it's indeed proving to be political suicide as people become more and more impatient with what's happened since. But the answer to your question simply is no, there's no legal ramifications, because the referendum process has no legal standing.
We'll pick that up after this break. We'll be back with more from Mike Robinson of UK Column News here on Stop the Presses. Stay tuned.
Not to lose beyond surrender. Nothing novel in your fate. Christ, what have you done? You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magful clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
And returning to Stop the Presses here on the Republic Broadcasting Network, coming to you live, your host, Mark Anderson. Stop the Presses being my news association. My blog is thetruthhound.com. Some reminders there. My guest today, Mike Robinson, co-editor of UK Column News. I make occasional appearances on there, as do many others, as I mentioned earlier. And Mike, you've been doing UK Column News now, at least in a TV-like format, for what? I'm going to take a stab at maybe 7 to 8 years.
Yes, about that. I think it was 2011 we started.
Okay, I was pretty close. You used to do a hard copy newspaper, and of course you have a website, ukcolumn.org. We'll mention that again later. You know, I took a few more notes during the break, Mike, and what you were talking about with referendums there being really more like a poll or survey in a slightly glorified form, and they're not really binding. They just want to get a pulse of the people. And yet, the pulse was strong enough in the first Brexit referendum in June 2016 to where the government does feel trepidation at disobeying that first referendum, and yet there's this consideration of a second referendum because the first one is not legally binding. But then in come these Remain protesters that have the European Union flag and similar regalia adorning their clothes. Me and Eddie, a friend there, when I visited this past early summer, we were in a pub having our lemonade, ha ha ha, and many of them were in there, and they seem to be in fairly high numbers. Now, are they genuine grassroots Brits, or are they rent-a-mobs imported from neighboring countries? Is there an exaggeration in the press as to how many Remainers have been out on the streets in recent months? Is that a genuine movement, or is it another one of these George Soros, financed movements? You know, that sort of thing.
Let's start with the referendum itself, just to finish off from before the break. And that the point to make there is that, you know, the referendum has no legal standing. It's not legally binding. But as I say, it would have been political suicide for them not to accept the result. And part of the reason for that is because, whereas at a general election we would expect a turnout to be anywhere from 40 to 60%, for this referendum there was a turnout between 70 and 80%.
That's a lot.
So, you know, that's a pretty high turnout. So people were engaged, they were motivated, and people did come out to vote. And because that was, such a strong expression of opinion, which doesn't normally happen in politics in the UK, they couldn't really not respect the result. Now, the problem then was that of course, the result was to leave. Now, I don't think it's right to say, I don't think I've seen any evidence to suggest that there's anybody being brought in from outside to protest on favour of remaining. A significant number of people did vote to remain, and they are being given the opportunity to express themselves in the sense that the mainstream media is amplifying their message, while at the same time promoting the idea that people that are that voted for Brexit are either older generation or they're right wing nutcases, and so the mainstream media is presenting people that voted to leave in a particularly negative light, and they're presenting people who they're suggesting that the people who voted that we should stay in are disenfranchised, and they're presenting them in generally positive light. So I think most, if there's any manipulation, it's in the media.
So that's where the emphasis is coming from. It's not artificially swelled numbers on the Remain side. It's slanted media coverage is what you're basically saying.
No, and indeed, up until recently, when the penny finally dropped with the Brexit camp, that perhaps Brexit isn't going to happen at all. Really, the Brexit side of the argument didn't have anything to complain about or to campaign about, because as far as they were concerned, they had won the argument. So all the protests are on the Remain side. That was up until relatively recently. So while some people, a few voices, were saying from the very beginning that this was not going to end well, the big personalities were involved in campaigning on the Brexit side, people like Nigel Farage, were saying, "Oh, this is a done deal now; we can retire." So people on the Brexit side have over the last couple of years have been lulled into a false sense of security, and to be honest, I don't understand why any of them trusted the Theresa May government to follow through on the promises they made, because there's no Conservative government in living memory, as far as I can remember, has ever kept a promise. So, it really was pretty naive of people on the Brexit side to get to this point, expecting that they were going to get what they were told they were going to get.
Right there, Mike, we do have a caller, Lark from Texas. I'd like to stay focused also on the EU and Brexit-related matters. Lark, you out there?
Oh, hi, Mark.
How you doing?
Just fine, and welcome to your guest. My question focuses on how possibly organizations like UK Column, which I think is a valuable resource, can unite people on different sides of the aisle in Great Britain. I think one way to do that that I haven't seen explored adequately enough, especially at UK Column, is this idea of what does EU law actually entail? I mean, we know that it is a new economic and taxing scheme, you know, based on a lot of fraud and so forth. But, you know, I wonder if the British people, for instance, understand what EU law is, that it's, you know, in the main. It's known as acquis communautaire or community acquis. Or simply community law. And this is something that's easily fleshed out, you know, so that you can nail it and put it, you know, get to the meat of the matter. You know, what does this kind of law entail? And believe me, from what I've been able to see over the years, there's enough, you know, just in a synopsis, a brief glance, for everyone to hate. No matter if you're of the left or the right. Your thoughts?
I think that's a fair point. I mean, part of there's a number of issues there. The first part is that, as a general rule, the British people don't really understand their own law and their own constitutional law and the basic principles of their own law, never mind the European law. I mean, the fact of the matter is, you're absolutely right. The British law and the British Constitution is not compatible with European law. And so what we've seen over the last 40, 50 years is a gradual overlaying of European law on top of British law. And certainly in the last 30 years, I think that's a fair statement, 30 years or so, British constitutional law isn't even taught to up-and-coming lawyers. So we now have a generation of lawyers in the last 20, 30 years that are coming through the legal system and becoming more and more senior, like that they actually don't really appreciate what the differences are between the British system and the European system. And they're just accepting this ever-encroaching European system into the UK. And so I think you're absolutely right about that. As for the acquis communautaire, which is the entire body of EU law, last year the British government pushed through a bill in Parliament, which eventually became the Withdrawal Act 2018, and that did two things. First of all, it repealed the piece of legislation that brought us into the European Union in the first place, but then secondly, it brought the entire body of the acquis communautaire onto the British statute books. And so what that means is that from a legal standpoint, Britain, on the day that it leaves the EU, will be fully legally in sync with the European Union. And so theoretically what that means is that even though we're outside the European Union, that Britain could maintain parity with the EU in the future. That should make it the argument for that from the government side is that should make it easier to enter into some kind of future trading relationship, which is slightly different to the one we have at the moment, because we're basically on par with regulatory standards and so on. But that doesn't change the fact that. And you're absolutely right, because even the people on the Brexit side of this argument have not appreciated or understood what the implications of taking the whole body of European law onto the British statute books means. So you know, that is something that could be used to sort of galvanize opinion across. But I have to say that one of the things that this issue of Brexit has done, which might be viewed as positive, a positive thing, is that it has resulted in people that would have traditionally considered themselves on the left of politics or on the right of politics are suddenly starting to talk, and people are increasingly becoming skeptical about the whole left-right paradigm. So there are opportunities there for sure.
Well, you know something, I think you hit on something when you talk about the legal practitioners in your country. You know, the average American, for instance, in the U.S., has no clue that a quote-unquote Soviet legal expert by the name of Harold Berman, recently deceased, taught budgeting law professors at Harvard University for 40 years, and then 20 more years at Emory University in Atlanta. Now, here is an example of a man who is a noted Soviet legal expert teaching American law students for the past 60 years. So this is what's been happening in Europe, in the university and educational system, and I think we need to look closely at this livery system, too, that you have over there, because anytime you're a member of any kind of a collectivist entity, like in this country, the Bar Association, you basically give up your exercise of free will to a higher authority. And that would be the leadership of those various institutions. I mean, no lawyer, no banker, no scientist, no teacher, no university professor wants to lose their tenure or their job or their status because they speak out against what is flat immorality. You see my point?
I do, for the record. Yes, Lark. Any further remarks, Lark? I'm going to move on with a couple other comments, but we appreciate your input, and you enabled Mike to deeply describe something very important here, and that is, and I think it's one of the most important points of today's show, that leaving the EU does not spare the UK the controls of EU law or legalities and regulations. And so, Mike, based on what Lark raised and what you answered, is leaving really leaving?
No, we're not really leaving. Even if we crash out, as the phrase which is used in the media is that we will crash out on the 29th of March with no deal. But there is one policy area where there's a deal already done, and that is with respect to defense and security.
I was wanting to get to that. Yes, thank you.
And this is an area which, at no point has this become a significant discussion point or topic of discussion from 2015, when this whole process began, to date. In no television debate, in no discussion, with a think tank, in no parliamentary discussion. In no discussion with the public, between the press and the public, at no point has defence and security been brought into the discussion in any significant way. And the reason for that is that if we go back to 2015, the EU made as a condition of any future change in the relationship between the UK and the European Union, they made as a condition of that Britain would permit further unification and integration of the various national armed forces to create a European Union armed force, a military force, and with that comes a European Union foreign policy. With that comes a European Treasury, an EU Treasury, and with that comes an EU taxation. And at this point in time, there has at no point up to date has the EU been able to tax EU citizens directly. Taxation has to happen through national governments, but it's not going to be too long now before the EU is able to tax directly. And the military union is, the defence union is the mechanism that they're using to get to that. And of course, once you've got a foreign policy and a defence union and a banking union, they've already got a currency union. Once you've got all these things together, you have created a federal state. But it's not federal in the sense of United States federal. This is something quite different. And your caller there was talking, you know, mentioned a Soviet lawyer training lawyers in the United States. The model, the type of federalism that we're talking about with respect to the European Union is a Soviet style.
Here comes the last dance. We'll wind this up and summarize it, Mike, in just a minute. We'll be right back.
Smile, such platonic eye, how they drown in incomplete capacity. Strangers thought them all when the fear it calls, how we drown in stylistic audacity. Charge the common ground.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
And returning to Stop the Presses, your host, Mark Anderson, in the final short segment here on the 1st of March, 2019, coming to you live, having been doing rebroadcasts this past Wednesday and Monday. My guest today, Mike Robinson of UK Column News, a longtime noted colleague here. And Mike, this last part of the show, you've really hit on the really trenchant parts of this issue of Brexit. And this last point, that the military union, which goes along with fiscal union, banking union, and the trade and currency unions that happened earlier, all this consolidation, that this military union has given rise to foreign policy and a European superstate, a federal one, that would differ in terms of federal from the United States. And briefly, this is a pretty short segment, and then we'll give some information on watching your show. What, in your mind, what is the difference between the federal government here and the federal state that's being created there?
Well, you know, you have a constitution. It's based on some pretty fundamental principles. It's based on the idea of God-given unalienable rights. This is the opposite of what the European Union is based on, of course, because really, in the EU, you have no rights until they're given to you by the EU, and of course, what they give, they can take away. So there's a fundamental difference in approach, and the legal system is completely different. You know, for example, in France, if you are charged with a crime, you're unlikely to be allowed out on bail. You would go straight to prison while that offence is investigated. And in France, you can stay in prison for, I believe it's certainly 18 months. It might even be longer than that without actually having been convicted of anything.
My goodness.
And the French prisons have some of the worst suicide rates in the whole of Europe. Just to give one example. So the legal system on the European continent is somewhat different. So, you know, this is not compatible fundamentally with the UK, but the system of governance in the EU, as I say, is not of the same. If people hear the word federal, in the United States, they perhaps think it means a particular thing. That's not the case in the EU. That's basically it.
Yeah, what's disturbing is that, as we've kind of outlined today, and you've made very clear, really, is that Brexit really isn't Brexit, and that the military union part of this that ties Britain to the EU military union makes pulling out and extricating the UK from the EU all that much more implausible and difficult. It suggests, and we hate to jump to conclusions, but it suggests a grand deception. I won't make any final conclusions there, but it sure looks that way. But I want to thank you for being on the show. Your website, ukcolumn.org, any other contact info you want to give out?
No, that's the best place to go, is ukcolumn.org. And the news programs are posted there as soon as they've happened, and you can watch them live. So we are on live Mondays, Wednesdays, Fridays, 1 p.m. UK time, and everybody's welcome.
Great. Thanks for being on the show, Mike. You have a great day. We'll talk soon.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
And we'll see you next time on Stop the Presses.
It happens more often than we can imagine. In my case, I was sitting at home, and out of nowhere, I just started feeling uncomfortable. Then it got worse, and I started perspiring. I tried to ignore it, but I waited too long. The chest pain came as we were driving to the hospital emergency. I felt my life clock begin to tick. I barely survived. There was lots of damage done to my heart. What do I do now? I was lucky. I took a leap of faith and tried a 7-herb formula with hawthorn, garlic, cayenne, and more called Extendivite. Herbs have been used for thousands of years to keep us healthy. If you're not using Extendivite as a preventative supplement, maybe it's time to start. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.